When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hi, Mets fans. Welcome back to Today Your Love, Tomorrow the World Series. My name is Brian. With me, as always, is Chris. We took an unplanned week off last week because there was some family stuff going on, and there wasn't that much to talk about, so it's not the end of the world, but we feel like there is some interesting stuff brewing in the Mets world right now, and we want to start with the call-up of Ronnie Mauricio. Now, this is something that we have discussed in the show quite a bit about maybe why it hasn't been happening and some potential reasons why it hasn't been happening, but he's here now, and he had a pretty good first game. Chris, you have been leading the charge on this Mauricio question, so I want to start with your thoughts on this. What do you expect from Mauricio for the rest of the season, and how justified did you feel when he hit that rocket off the bat last night?
That was pretty great. I mean, if you could pick a way to make a statement, a home run in your first major league at bat is always the absolute coolest thing you could do, right? But 117 miles an hour off the bat, a double that was hit so hard that the right fielder just kind of stared at it while it went over his head. You know, that was a nice way to start things off. I think expectations have to be realistic. Even in the game last night, we saw that double that was ripped. We saw a strikeout on a pitch that was nowhere near the zone. And I feel like those two things, if we could have thrown in a stolen base, I feel like we might have seen everything that Mauricio is all right in the span of one game.
Yeah.
But I don't know. To me, it's exciting that he's up. And I feel like he should at least be given the opportunity that Mark Vientos has gotten this year. Certainly Brett Beatty's had more than an opportunity. He spent the majority of the season up and he's back on the major league roster now. But yeah, if Mauricio can just kind of do what he was doing in AAA at the major league level, and that's not an easy thing to just assume anybody can do. But that would be nice to see. The Mets do have the power speed combo right next to him. You know, if Mauricio is playing second base, Francisco Lindor obviously hits home runs and steals some bases. But it's not the type of player the Mets have had a lot of over the last, what, decade or two?
Yeah.
I mean, Carlos Beltran was that. You know, David Wright in his heyday stole some bases on top of being primarily a power guy.
In a 30-30 season, didn't he?
Yeah. So that kind of player, Jose Reyes never had the power really to go with it. It the doubles and triples kind of power to go with a lot of speed. And I'm throwing out some very hefty Mets names here. So yeah, keep expectations reasonable, but here's three Mets, legends, Reyes's personal, actions sort of, taking away from what he did on the field, of course, but yeah, with Mauricio, I think it would just be nice if he could do those kinds of things. You know, if he hits three or four home runs in the month of September and steals anywhere between 5 and 10 bases, maybe that's throwing too much out there for what he can do. But if he were to do that kind of thing, you could be intrigued or excited about maybe what he could do next year. So let's see if it happens. If he strikes out 50% of the time and, opposing pitchers just don't throw him anything in the zone and it doesn't work, that also doesn't necessarily mean his career is over.
Right.
But yeah, it should be a fun ride. And it would be nice to have. Like, I don't specifically remember everybody on the Marlins and Phillies who tortured the Mets in 2007 and 8. But it would be fun to have somebody like Mauricio factor into keeping the Marlins out of the playoffs or whatever. The Phillies are pretty firmly in at this point.
Yeah, I think the Phillies are probably a lock. This point, yeah. Or as close to a lock as you can be this far out.
Right. Yeah. No, I've kept hoping that they'd have a skid like almost every other team in that National League wildcard race has, but I think they're safe, unfortunately. And I don't particularly hate this version of the Marlins, but any little bit of revenge that could happen from 15, 16, 17 years ago, sign me up. But yeah, it should be. It should be fun, and I don't know. It just gave an extra reason to tune in and check things out, because I don't know. At the end of the day, we can all try to put proper context on AAA and Syracuse, what the league is doing and all that. And I it's the right thing to do. But there's just a whole lot of stuff that we don't know until somebody actually gets that shot at the major league level. So I think with these four players who have kind of been in that discussion all year, Francisco Alvarez, Vientos Beatty, and Mauricio, Alvarez is the only one who has really stuck. You know, early on with Beatty, it looked like he was playing very well. He clearly won the starting job at third base. And then all of a sudden he wasn't playing well. And then that lasted for basically two and a half months before he got sent back to Syracuse. So I think if everyone had looked at all four of those players, the prediction at the beginning of the year probably would have been that Beatty would have had the best major league performance this year. Right now he's had sort of the second best by default. You know, Vientos has really struggled in his time at the major league level, but you can't make long-term plans and major conclusions based on 1 month of playing time. But it would just be nice to know if Mauricio is a guy who, maybe he goes into next year with expectations sort of like Beatty did coming into this year.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, Alvarez has had a pretty rough August and even rough July. He only has 10 hits in all of August, one home run in August. you know, after coming out so hot early in the season, Alvarez has considerably cooled down as well. But like you said, he's stuck, right? He is going to be this team's catcher, not just this season, but in the future. I think it's pretty much undeniable that he has emerged as the everyday catcher, at least for next season.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And in his case, it's definitely good that he, even if he's struggling, good that he's still just out there getting his reps. The most games he had played in a single season before this year was in the 90s, and he's already over 100. Yeah, that's a significant jump, right? Or, oh, wait, nope, sorry, if I could do math, he played in 112 last year. I misread a row on Fangraphs, but he should still finish with more games played this year than he has in any other year of his professional career. And I think there's a lot of usefulness in that as he gets ready for next year. But with Alvarez and Mauricio and even Beatty, you know, none of these guys are old by any means. So anything they can show at the major league level at this age would be encouraging for sure. And yeah, I mean, Mauricio by wins above replacement is not going to get himself to the top of the Mets rookie list by the end of September, but very excited to see what he can or can't do and, you know, kind of take things from there. This is one of the silver linings of a season that went as terribly wrong as it did, is that it doesn't hurt you at all to give it a shot. So I don't know what took so long, but I'm glad it's happening now.
I agree. I think we're going to have a longer discussion about this in a few weeks when we have a better sense of what it looks like. But I mean, here's the question I've been asking myself this whole time. Even if Mauricio comes out and strikes out in every single plate appearance, and whenever the ball's hit to him, he bobbles it, does that really affect the Mets' bottom line for this season? My argument is no, and you get all this valuable intel on this player. So I see no downside to him being here, aside from, as I've mentioned this before, if it kills trade value for him. That's the one downside of him coming up and being absolutely miserable. But I think, like you said, it's worth a shot. If he can provide some fun for the team in this last month of the season, that's great. Who has been providing some fun for the last month of the season or so has been DJ Stewart. Now, DJ Stewart is a name that I don't think any of us had notched for this, for, you know, making meaningful contributions to the Mets in this season. I'm trying to look when he was signed. He signed as a free agent with the Mets in February and was basically, we knew, just minor league depth at this point. But this season, he's put up 0.6 BWAR, which is not nothing for a part-time player who, I'm trying to see when his major league debut was this season in terms of, you know, date. His first game up was July 4th. He's put up more than half a win in limited playing time in the last 2 months. That's, you know, that's nothing to sneeze at. The guy just seems to have a knack for big hits right now. He's at 3 home runs in his last 5 games. He is... You know, he is not a great fielder whatsoever, and no one's going to mistake him for a Gold Glover out there, but he can sort of fake it in a corner, maybe. I don't know if I'm ready to necessarily go there yet, but, you know, dude's hitting. He is, you know, he has an OPS plus of 167 right now and has hit 9 home runs. It's a really nice, surprising outcome for Stewart. I wouldn't be mad if DJ Stewart was their fourth or fifth outfielder the next season, but I don't know if you're willing to go that far or not. How do you feel about DJ Stewart bench Met?
It's a possibility. So I'm trying to remember, by no means would I have predicted anything like what he's doing now, but I'm trying to remember, and probably really can't answer the question without going back and re-listening to every episode that we've done, whether or not I had said something nice about him being in the org on the podcast. But certainly somebody who, like, at the time of his signing, as the season was starting, I remember making note of him in some fashion. It might have just been, like, to friends in, you know, our regular texts about the Mets. But he had caught my eye a little bit as basically the guy who had been a league average hitter in limited playing time who had some pop. Now, this is unheard of for him. He's got a chance to, you know, set a new single season high in home runs in a little more than one third of the at bats from the 12 he hit in 2021 for the Orioles. So again, whatever I said about him, and whether or not it was on this show, it wasn't predicting this. But
you're trying to say is that Christian Amas returns?
Yeah, maybe a little. I don't know, but it's been a lot of fun to see this. And when you have a trade deadline where you give up on the season, and you know, when it was a well-earned trade deadline based on how bad the Mets had been up to that point, to be clear. But when you're in a season like this, you got to find something fun if you're going to continue watching. And you know, a lot of us, I think everybody who's listening to this show is still paying attention kind of regardless of where the Mets are, you know, at in the standings in September. And it's one of the nice things. I don't know that it's necessarily exclusive to baseball, but maybe it's just confirmation bias and being a baseball first kind of sports fan, but it feels like this random player doing things that catch your attention. It happens more in baseball than any other sport. Not that you don't have breakout players everywhere and all that, but there's just something about the game that, hey, this guy got hot for a month. And even if he doesn't play that much in the majors for the rest of his career, you know, I'm not saying people are going to have him be the first Met they recall from the 2023 season, but he will stick in the memory as somebody who, you know,
he will be an immaculate grid guy in 5 years.
Right. But, you know, those stretches of sort of exceeding your norm can really stand out. Rod Barajas, for some reason, is like a Met who, you know, had a great month and everybody was in love with him. And, you know, overall, if you looked at what he did as a Met, it'd be like, oh yeah, he was a catcher. He was there. Right. Yeah. But yeah. And I think the fact that Stewart has just been, he seems so like giddy to have all this happening.
Yes.
Yeah. Definitely adds to it. So, yeah, as of right now, power bat off the bench, he's what, how many more home runs has he hit than Vogelbach this year?
it's what is it? Stewart has 9. Let's see how many Vogelbach has so far this season.
He hasn't quite caught up to him yet, but Vogie's got 13.
Okay, yeah.
And
Vogie's turned around a little bit too as of late, actually.
Yeah, no, he has. And they went back to back in a game recently, right?
Uh-huh.
I think since the last time we recorded. So I'm not trying to pick on him, but to have somebody come up in the span of this little time and almost match your home runs for the whole season. Yeah. And with Stewart, you know, you can at least get him out there in right field.
Right.
I mean, he had that one game where he had 2 home runs, the walk-off hit by pitch, and made a nice catch in right field all in the same game. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the kind of game that that might be the best game he ever has
right.
at the major league level. And, you know, that's not necessarily that's not an insult. very, very few people get to hit 2 home runs in one game, drive in the winning run in walk-off fashion granted, not a hit by pitch, and make a good defensive play all at once. Like,
yeah,
for all of us either recording these or listening to these podcasts, the best version of that is doing what he did in like a beer league softball game. So
yes. or for some people, like remembering that day from high school.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I agree. You know, there is something about baseball, like you were saying. I don't know if it's just a numbers game in baseball, where just there are so many professional baseball teams, and I don't mean just in the major leagues, but because there's so many levels of the minor leagues, that you know the cream is going to rise to the top of each division, and so there are players who can't really cut single A, but the ones that do go up to double A, and then it keeps building up, and so anybody who gets to triple A has already done something that none of the people listening to this podcast probably could do. And it's that is something on its own. But it's also not a terrible coincidence when that guy can put together a month that resembles the level that is above where he actually is, right? And so it just, because of the way it happens, it's just always exciting. I mean, and it's funny, there are lots of different versions of this guy throughout Mets history and through baseball history. Sometimes this guy happens like in the first week of the season. There was a Yankee who I'm not going to remember his name now, in the mid-90s, who had like the best first 2 weeks in baseball history. And everybody was like making room next to Babe Ruth in Monument Park for him. And then he never did it again, right? But there's something especially fun for me about these guys that emerge in dead seasons, in seasons that really don't matter. It's just a different type of vibe, and I love it. So yeah, good on DJ Stewart.
And just to touch on the question about next year, it looks like he's not even ARB eligible yet. Never. So
wow.
Yeah, yeah. Fangraphs has his service time at just over 2 years. He's got 1 year of options remaining. I don't know if that was before this season, so the Mets would have used the last of that. But somebody who you could at least keep. It's not even a tender or non-tender situation. You could just go into the offseason and have him there. And if you go out and build out a team and he doesn't fit into it and you have to, you know, option him and risk losing him by the time spring training is halfway over, then all right, whatever. But between now and then, I'm fine with him having a 40-man roster spot over the winter.
Absolutely. Yeah. It seems like a very, very reasonable thing to do, right? Just you keep him around and you see what happens. And if they have an amazing offseason where there's no room for DJ Stewart, okay, that's fine. But otherwise, why not try? Why not try and keep him around a little bit?
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Who hasn't been around in a little bit is Joey Lucchese. And I just want to briefly touch on this because I am maybe just behind our friend Linda Cerevich, the biggest Joey Lucchese fan in the Home Run Applesauce family of podcasts. And look, Lucchese is not a perfect player. He is not even averaging 5 innings per start in the majors this year, but his last start he made, which was a spot start on the 18th of August, he went 5 2/3, gave up no earned runs, struck out 5, 4 hits, 2 walks. And, you know, that will play in a dead season in September, no matter, I mean, that would play in a good season in September, you know, but, you know, I understand that. He averaged a lot of pitches per at bat, a lot of pitches per inning, but I don't really understand why he hasn't been part of the Mets' most recent batch of call ups. And they still have a couple of roster spots to play with, so maybe he's coming in a couple of days. But of the players the Mets have called up, I don't get why Lucchese is not one of them. Do you have any thoughts on this, Chris?
No, I'm with you and sort of being puzzled. What he's done in the limited time that he's been out there for the Mets, you know, he's made 6 starts, 3.54 ERA. His FIP's a little bit more than a run higher than that. That's as respectable as what McGill and Peterson have done in their starting time, if not more. So yeah, it's a little bit weird that he's spent so much more time in AAA than he has at the major league level. I don't know. I don't know that I'd necessarily expect him to significantly outperform those two guys over the course of 100 or more innings. Mm-hmm. But I just don't quite get it.
I mean, especially when you have Carlos Carrasco doing absolutely nothing on the mound, just right. being atrocious there. Why you wouldn't give Lucchese a spot start or two down the stretch?
Yeah, and I mean, look, he's under team control for next year, and I can't figure it out. I don't know. Like you said, there's only two pitchers in the rotation who are consistently looking like good major league pitchers right now.
Yes.
And one of them benefits from a little extra time between starts.
Yes.
And rosters have expanded. So, like, no offense to Jose Buto coming back up, but I don't get it either. Maybe we get to see more of the Cherv soon and this becomes a moot point, but right. I can't really make any sense of it.
I mean, I guess there could be an argument that if they're working on something with him at AAA and he's starting to improve, or they don't feel they're done with his work yet, if they feel like he is a piece of the organization going forward, maybe you don't want to risk abandoning a project or an improvement, you know, something for a couple of games in September. I can understand that argument, but I don't really see evidence of that. Lucchese is a guy, I think we know who he is, don't we? More or less, as a player? Like, is there anything you think that they could really do to fundamentally change who Lucchese is?
No. It's odd, but... Yeah. I'd like to see a little bit more of him in September because I do think he should be in the mix to be the sixth or seventh starting pitcher on the depth chart going into next year.
Absolutely. Yeah. Maybe not the fifth starter. Right.
Yeah, no. The Mets' current third, fourth, fifth, and sixth starters should all be in Syracuse to start next year.
Yes, that is true.
Well, in Carrasco's case, he'll be out of the organization.
Yeah, and possibly out of baseball the way he's pitching, unfortunately, which is
nobody
wants. Carrasco seems like a legitimately good dude. No one wants to see that, but he has pitched just like, I mean, he's been easily the Mets' worst pitcher this season. And that, and in a rotation that involves David Peterson and Tyler McGill, that is saying something.
Yeah. And nothing other than a likable dude who had a really great comeback story. You know, maybe he ends up with like a minor league deal or a low dollar major league deal with a team like the A's or something. But I don't know. He might hit a point. He might retire. Like, it's having no inside information on that. It's just you see players who at a certain age, the production just falls off and that's the last line on their baseball reference page, you know?
Exactly.
So likable guy. If he wants to continue, I hope he does land somewhere, but it is possible that he's made his last major league start.
Yes. We should mention he was placed on waivers in the last week and was not claimed by any team, which, again, based on his performance this year, it's not surprising that nobody took a flyer on him. But you know, very few baseball stories end happily. This one seemed like a pretty precipitous drop off for a guy who was pretty good even just a year ago. But, you know, that's the way it goes sometimes. We do want to highlight one starting pitcher before we get out of here, and that is Kodai Senga. I think both of us were pretty excited about Senga when he signed. Although I don't want to speak for you, Chris. I am certainly not a connoisseur of professional baseball outside of the U.S. So I had heard lots of good things about Senga, but I had not seen him pitch very much. And I have no eye for sort of taking what somebody does in the NPB and applying that to what that would do in the majors. I that is not even remotely a skill that I possess. And so while I thought Senga would be good and I could dream on him being great, it's been really fun to watch him emerge as you said to me before we started recording, a legitimate Cy Young candidate for this season, possibly. So let's talk about Senga for a minute, just heap some praise on him. I mean, I think that he has gotten really good at knowing when to deploy the ghost fork and when to sort of let it not be the big pitch he's using that day. I guess it was his second to last start he made where it seemed like every fork ball he threw was in the dirt, swung on for a third strike.
Yeah.
He's just getting really good at deploying that weapon, even though the league has seen the weapon now.
Right. Yeah, no, and what's been so exciting about watching him, it's not exactly linear from the early months to the late months, but the overall trend has been one of improvement as his season has gone along, which is exactly what you want to see, right? Like, given that he came in as a 30-year-old in his first season in Major League Baseball, I feel like, look, if you can get Shohei Ohtani came over at a much younger age and despite the injury issues has still been the best player in baseball every time he's been on the field over the last few years, you know? So if you can get a guy who's really young and just that insanely talented, great. But pitching being something that is a mix of physical talent and craft and art and just, you know how and all that. I feel like if you're going to get somebody who's 30 years old, you maybe can capture that balance of still having the physical stuff and having the experience to know how to adjust. And he's done a hell of a job of it this year. to the point that obviously the Mets have a lot of work to do to fill out the rotation behind him and Quintana next year, but you could go in right now. If they want to make a major move, great. I will not complain about Steve Cohen spending money ever after all the years of the Wilpon ownership that we dealt with his fans. But if they go into next season and he's the opening day starter, he's earned it. It's just been a lot of fun to watch. And it really going, especially early in the season, walks were, a big problem. And he still had good stats overall, despite them. But, more so than ERA, which has also improved as the season's gone along. His first month, his walk rate was 15%. And, in August, it was 8.5. In July, it was 7.7. To be able to cut your walk rate in half while you're playing at this level, in your first season, playing in a new country, in a new league, with a new baseball, all of that stuff. I mean, it just looks like on paper that he has adapted extremely well as this season has gone along. Does that mean that he'll be the standout best pitcher in baseball next year? I don't know, but I feel like it's a huge question mark that the Mets got a great answer to coming into this year.
Yes.
On the Cy Young note, it would take a couple of bad outings or one really bad outing each from Blake Snell and Justin Steele. But Senga is third among qualified starting pitchers in the National League in ERA right now at 3.08. Everybody in the top five is right in that same innings, 140 something innings where Senga's at. And workload does go a long way in, the voting for that kind of an award. But the guys who have thrown a lot more innings, Zach Gallen and Logan Webb, their ERAs they're in the mid three range, which is not terrible by any means.
No, not at all.
So I don't want to go out and say Senga's going to win this award, but if Snell and Steele were to slip up a bit, and if he just keeps doing what he's been doing on his own, he could end the year with the best ERA in the National League. And whether or not there's enough of a gap between him and some of those guys who are going to finish with 20, 30, 40 more innings than him. I don't know, but it's kind of wild to think that that's even a possibility. And it would make for something extra exciting. I mean, his starts right now are one of the reasons, I said this earlier about Mauricio making his debut, but Senga pitching is a reason to tune in right now. Scherzer and Verlander never felt that way this year.
Right.
I don't want to discount what Scherzer did for the Mets last year when they won 101 games. But there's just something different about the guy who came, who's making his name as a Met, as opposed to the late era Hall of Famer.
Right. Right. It's a Tom Glavine thing, right? Tom Glavine threw lots of good games for the Mets, but you never felt like, oh, Tom Glavine's starting tonight. I have to watch this. I'm in a season that I've never seen before. No, you're gonna see the thing you've expected to see versus the thing you maybe hoped on and dreamed on, which is what you're getting with Senga. I totally understand that position. Absolutely. Even just the fact that Senga is, he has an outside chance, not even an outside chance, he has, I think, a pretty decent chance to end the season with 200 strikeouts.
Yeah.
A guy with limited innings and his first year in American baseball, I'd say that's pretty damn impressive.
He's definitely been a highlight of this season, and hopefully next year we'll be talking about which game we want him to start in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's always a dream, right?
Yeah. Hey, I will believe that the Mets are giving up on 2024 when Steve Cohen spends more than a month without like doing something.
Yeah. No, I agree.
And like the bar is so low, and obviously they should have met that bar this year with the roster they had. You know, that is a separate issue, but you just look and what Major League Baseball has done to watering down the playoff pool.
Yes.
I hate it, but the Mets should be going into every season with an owner with this much money thinking that they can at least do that.
Yes. And despite what Max Scherzer has repeatedly said, I do not believe the Mets are punting on next season. I believe they're not going to maybe spend the way they spent this year, but I don't think they're punting on the season. And we will have plenty of time to talk about that sooner than later. So why don't we get right into our music picks for the week, Chris? What should folks be listening to this beautiful week of Labor Day?
So we've recommended, I believe, any past recommendations for Pixies records had come from you.
Yes.
But I'm going to just make my pick this week, Doolittle, which it's an obvious one. If you listen to us, I can't imagine that you're not familiar with this record already, but just in case, just in case you're not, I had an opportunity to see and photograph the band last week up at Omegang. And they were playing with Modest Mouse and Cat Power. Had a really nice night getting to see them. I hadn't seen Pixies or Modest Mouse in almost 20 years.
Wow.
Not together, but I had seen them both during college. And then Modest Mouse just like completely fell off my radar, and going back and listening to some of their stuff and, you know, hearing what they played live, I was like, I'm not even really sure why that happened. Like that was a band I liked that there was no like, oh man, screw them. They made a record that sucked or whatever. It was just, I kind of like a weird era between the way that we all shared music in college and then the gap between that and like Spotify.
Yes.
So, you know, I mean, I was still doing things and listening to lots of bands, but there's just this weird gray area for if you're younger than us, you've never had it. Your music consumption has been a totally different experience, but
yes.
But anyway, that's enough about Modest Mouse for now. Doolittle is just one of those records. There's not a bad song on it, really. Like, you know, I'm just looking at the track list on AllMusic and, you know, AllMusic on all their pages, they have like their picks of the best songs and, you know, Debaser, Monkey Gone to Heaven, Here Comes Your Man, Wave of Mutilation, and Gouge Away are all highlighted on that track listing. But to me, you could pick four or five other songs off the record and not include any of those, and you'd still have gems.
Yeah.
So I'm not criticizing. It's just a thing they do. And it's, there's a lot of records I love where I will give a huge benefit of the doubt to like a lull here or there, or like the weird track that's like the rock equivalent of a hip hop, like sketch
sure
thing or whatever. Like I'm thinking of Pearl Jam with like Bugs, right?
Yep,
or, you know, that kind of a thing where I love the rest of the record so much that I just accept that that's part of it. And I let it play through. Right. As somebody who still loves albums, but I really do think with Doolittle that you could just randomly, I mean, they picked a very nice order to put the songs in, but you could just go in and pluck a few songs out of there and you're not going to have to justify or rationalize any of it. It is just start to finish great record. And although their songs on average, you know, are not quite as short as the Minutemen, I love a good short song.
Yes, absolutely.
I can do the jam band thing. I can do an 18-minute King Gizzard song is probably my favorite song of this century. But but when you can do catchy and good and just get it done and get it over with and move on to the next song, you know, it's like the British approach to TV series.
Right.
Especially seeing things linger too long and just not be good. Knowing when to just call it and say, yep, that's that song. It's great. It took less than 2 minutes and people are going to remember it forever. It's an art and I love it. So yeah, pretty, not groundbreaking pick here, but if for any reason you have not listened to Doolittle, start doing that now.
Yeah. I could not agree more. Doolittle is an iconic recording and it's an album that actually I don't go back to that much because if you're a Pixies fan, you know all those songs and you've heard all those songs live a million times. But when I happen to listen to it, you're just like, holy shit, this is one amazing song after another and it never lets up. So I totally co-signed there. So my record this week is a one that just came out a few weeks ago. It is called Echo the Diamond. It is by a singer-songwriter named Margaret Glaspie. This is an artist that got fed to me through the Spotify algorithm. So thank you, Spotify. I was listening to it. I thought, wow, this is such a cool song. It's really well produced. And specifically the drumming on it is so good. Turns out it is co-produced by Glaspie's romantic partner, which is Julian Lage, the great guitar player who has played with Nellis Klein and others. And the drummer on the record is Dave King of The Bad Plus. So it is a rock record or a singer-songwriter record with these very jazzy touches. The bass player on the album, Chris Morrissey, played with Andrew Bird and Ben Queller. And so he is sort of more in the indie rock world along with Glaspie. And then Lage and King are sort of these jazz guys. And so what happens is that the songs are very, I don't want to say straightforward because that makes it sound like I'm criticizing them. I don't mean that way at all. But they're very traditionally sort of in the rock idiom. But there are production flourishes and specifically the way the drums are weaved in and out of the song that sound totally unique and interesting and really elevate the record to something that I think I wasn't expecting going into it. And that is no offense to anyone involved, but it's so nice when you can hear a new record, a new band that, someone you're not really familiar with who just surprises you at every turn. That's one of my favorite things about being a music fan is just hearing surprising stuff when listening to something new. And so I will recommend specifically the track Turn the Engine is my favorite from the record. But every song on it has something really cool about it. And like I said, as somebody who loves arranging music and loves the arrangements of songs, the way that the drums fit into this are just chef kiss emoji. Fantastic. So yeah, check it out. Echo the Diamond by Margaret Glaspie. And we thank you, as always, for listening. Please go to homerunapplesauce.com or patreon.com/homerunapplesauce to support this podcast directly. We very much appreciate that. You can find Chris on social media at Chris McShane. I am on social media at Brian Inzenap. And until next time, let's go Mets.